This is chapter 31. And today we're going to be looking specifically at Genesis 31, 1 through 20. And the title of our message this morning is Jacob Returns to the Land of His Family. Now, last week we saw where Jacob's family was almost complete in number, with Lord remembering Rachel, and she bore Joseph. And then she will also bear again and have another son by the name of Benjamin. And Jacob is now beginning to become weary. He's getting up in age, and Laban's about worn him out, you know, changing all of the agreements that he's made with him over and over again. And Joseph sees and knows that Laban is just taking advantage of him. That's all he's doing. And he's looking for one excuse after another to keep Jacob working for him, because Laban's getting wealthy off of Jacob. And he's profiting from his labors. And so Jacob sees, I gotta get out of this, because I'm not really acquiring any kind of wealth for me and my family by staying and giving all of my labor to this man here. So he requests to leave Laban, as we saw last week. But he doesn't quite leave yet. He's only about three days' journey away from him. They separate themselves from it. But this week we're going to see where he and his family finally and covertly in secret depart from Laban. So let's begin reading Genesis 31, 1 through 20. Let's hear the word of God. And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with you. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it's not toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. And he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, and all the cattle thereof speckled. And if he said thus, the ring streak shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring streak. In other words, Jacob's saying, look, that's the agreement we made. It's not my fault if all the cattle being born are speckled and ring streaked. You know? Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring streaked, speckled, and gristled. And the angel of the Lord spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring streaked, speckled, and gristled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out of this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion of inheritance for us in our father's house? And this is basically a rhetorical question for them, because they are with Jacob when they leave. Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he hath gotten, the cattle of his getting which he hath gotten in Padan-Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. In other words, when he's stealing away, in the Hebrew that kind of means like he's taking Laban's heart away from him. You know. Because when he finds out that he's gone, Laban only thought that things were bad for him. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. And they overtook him in Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob, neither good or bad. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said unto Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives, taken with the sword? Now he's basically accusing him that he's forced his daughters to leave her father. Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and did not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, and thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt, but the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. So Jacob doesn't know what he's talking about. Jacob didn't know that Rachel had stolen those images that were out of it. So he said, with whomsoever thou findest thy God, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and unto Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. So she's sitting on top of the trunk where those images are hidden. And Laban searches all the tents. He didn't find them. Why? Because he's not looking where Rachel's sitting. Right? And she said unto her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. And Jacob was wroth, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said unto Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it before me here, before my brethren, thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years I have been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flocks have I not eaten. That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand is thou required, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was in the day of drought consume me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I have served thee 14 years for thy 2 daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me. Surely thou hast set me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what I can do this day unto these my daughters, unto these, unto their children which they have borne. Now therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for thee a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took the stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Gertash Dutha, and Jacob called it Gilead. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Gilead. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said unto Jacob, Behold this heap, and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be a witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee. And thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their fathers, judge betwixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread, and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. Now, we find that in verse 1 of Genesis 31, it says, And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all his glory. So they're basically accusing Jacob of stealing from their father. After Jacob had done all of this work for him and he became wealthy because of all of Jacob's labors, they still are not satisfied. They're still going to turn around and accuse him. Now, although Jacob was fervently desiring to be in his own country and was continually thinking about returning to Isaac and his mother, his admirable patience appears and he suspends his purpose till an occasion presents itself. Jacob doesn't make haste to make a decision to do something. So he doesn't say, I've had enough, I'm gone, this is it, I'm out of here. You know? And so, but there is some imperfection that may be mixed with his virtue, in that he did not make more haste to return. But the promise of God was always retained in his mind, as we're going to shortly see. Regarding this imperfection, he showed something of human nature. For the sake of obtaining wealth, Jacob postponed his return for 6 years. Regarding this imperfection, he showed something of human nature, as I said. When Laban was perpetually changing his terms, he could have justly left, couldn't he? Laban had done enough to show that it would have been a just cause for Jacob to leave. But now he has more than enough cause for leaving. His accumulation of wealth had become grievous and hateful to the sons of Laban. Remember, God began to bless Jacob for the agreement that they had made. And I'm going to go ahead and take the speckled ones. I'm going to go ahead and take the ring streaks. If there's any white spots on any other, it'll be easy to see in the field. You know, those are going to be mine, and the rest are going to be yours. The next thing you know, all we got in the field is the ring streaked and speckled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now he's being accused of stealing. You know, what is it to Laban that God's blessing Jacob? He had enough with what he had.
You never have enough.
Never have enough. You're right. But Jacob doesn't dare openly withdraw himself from their hatred. Now he's compelled to flee, and he does. But he does it how? In secret. Calvin believed that though Jacob's reluctance to leave is in some degree excusable, it was probably connected with indolence or laziness. Even as the faithful, when they direct their course towards God, often do not pursue it with all the zeal that they should, right? When we know what we have to do, but we don't do it, right? There's always some reason why. It's holding us back. Therefore, whenever the reluctance of the flesh retards us, let us learn to fan the zeal of our spirits into a flame. Now, there's no doubt that the Lord corrects this infirmity of Jacob, his servant, and gently spurs him on as he proceeds in his course. Now, if Laban had treated Jacob kindly and pleasantly, his mind would have been what? I'm happy here.
Yeah.
You know, everything's cool. Might as well stick around here with Laban. But now he's driven away by adverse looks and accusations. So the Lord must often secure the salvation of his people by subjecting them to the hatred, the envy, and the malice of the wicked, and by suffering them to be soothed with bland speeches. You ever wonder why wicked and evil people speak bad to you? when you've not given them cause to do so, there's a reason behind it. And it's for us to search out, what is the Lord? Because he's in control of them, right? It's for us to search out the cause and to find out, well, if the Lord were making everybody friendly to us, right? Then we would be lulled to sleep and more wanting to hold on to this world with all of its sinfulness. But it's times that the Lord has to pry away our fingers, right? And boy, it can be painful if there's a lot of arthritis in those fingers. You know? Yeah. It was far more useful to holy Jacob to have his father-in-law and his sons oppose him than to have them courteously fawn to his wishes, because their favor might have deprived him of the blessing of God. That's the key. We also have more than sufficient experience of the power of earthly attractions and of the ease with which they abound towards us, right? And obliviate any celestial blessings to us. They distract us, don't they, from the things of God. So we shouldn't think that the Lord is being too hard on us when we fall into adversity or receive no favor from the world. And brethren, I believe we're moving more and further and further in that direction with regard to this country. You know, as times go on, we're going to begin to recognize how few of us there are that really trust in God. And we're going to see them begin to turn towards us adversely. When hatred and threats and disgrace and slanders are often more advantageous to us than the praise of men on every side, it's hard for us to recognize that, isn't it? Yeah. To have people hate you and to despise you and to speak ill of you and to make up all kind of, oh, them doggone Christians, I hate them because they won't let us become homosexuals. Well, you haven't said anything to them about being a homosexual. You know, it's just the fact that you hold to your beliefs that basically, you know, convicts them. And they hate you for it. Right? But when they do this, praise the Lord. Because why? Because it's advantageous to us. And it spurs us on to follow the Lord more closely. Notice the viciousness of Laban's sons, who complained all throughout as if they had been plundered by Jacob. Yeah. Sordid and avaricious men, greedy men, labor under the disease of thinking that they are robbed of everything when they cannot gorge themselves.
Yet they apparently didn't do any work.
No. But they wanted what Jacob had, right? Their greed is insatiable. It follows of necessity that the prosperity of others torments them, as if they themselves would be reduced to nothing as a result of their gain. Right? I see my neighbor have something nice. Does that take away from me what I've got? No. It's just like Peter when the Lord told him, John's going to live a long time, but you're going to be carried away. What did Peter say? Why does he get to do that? Right? And what did the Lord say to him? He said, Can I not do what I want to with my own? What is that to you, Peter? What a rebuke, right? Yeah. There's no consideration from Laban's son as to whether or not Jacob had acquired this great wealth justly or unjustly. If my neighbor's got something nicer than I do, and he's worked for it, praise the Lord, the man's a hard-working man, right? But they are enraged and they're envious, assuming it could only have done. He could have only have gotten that. How? By stealing from my father. That's what he did. Laban had before confessed that he had been enriched by the coming of Jacob, and even that he had been blessed by the Lord for Jacob's sake. Didn't he confess that last chapter? Yeah. Jacob, if it wouldn't have been for you, I wouldn't have had all of this stuff that I've got. But now what? The tables are turning again on him. Now his sons murmur, and he himself is tortured with grief to find that Jacob also has made a partaker of the same blessing. But Laban's a fox. His sons are mouthy, right? They are talking their heads off, spouting all this stuff, and it's getting back to Jacob. But Laban, he's a fox. And thus we perceive the blindness of greed can never be satisfied. Paul calls it what? The love of money, greed, is the root of all evil. Because they who desire to swallow up everything must be dishonest and cruel and ungrateful and every way unjust. Observe how the sons of Laban, in the recklessness of their younger years, vent their frustration to vexation. But Laban, their father, like a cunning old fox, is silent. He betrays his wickedness by his outward expressions. You know, Jacob can see in his face. Although Laban's not saying anything, Jacob knows by the way he's looking at him. I know what Jacob Laban's thinking. So in verse 3, it says, "And the Lord says unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with you, Jacob." The hesitancy of Jacob, the holy man, is more plainly seen here. When we perceive that the evil was designed against him by his father-in-law, he still did not dare to move a foot unless encouraged by a new word from the Lord. But the Lord, who by facts had shown him already that no longer delay was to be made, now also urges him again by words. We learn from this example that although the Lord may provoke us to duty by adversity, yet we shall thereby profit little unless what?
Stimulus.
Unless we have the stimulus of the Word of God to be added to it. In other words, we can't always judge by outward circumstances what our move should be, right? This is what we learn from this. And we see what will happen to the reprobate, for either they become stupefied in their wickedness or they break out into fury. And that's what's happening here in our own country. The wicked are becoming stupider and stupider, if you want to use that word, right? More and more stupid. I look at the news and I say, how stupid can people be?
Stupid is it.
Yeah, they must.
Stupid is it. Yeah. Stupid does it.
You know, they tell you.
But Biden said he's tired of them lies. You're saying on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Biden is so good.
Yeah. He said yesterday, I think it was yesterday, he said that his popularity is so bad because the American people are mentally ill.
Well, I guess he would think so if he judges them.
So wait a second. Who's mentally ill here? When you've got your whole cabinet filled with freaks and circus animals.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
But he doesn't have a brain, so he doesn't think like that.
I know.
You see where he fell off his bicycle?
Yeah, but he fell off his rocker a lot.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Can't even ride a bike.
He's just unbelievably wicked.
And so we will see what will happen to the reprobates. They're becoming more idiots, bigger idiots every day. But the next step is what? For them to break out into what? Fury. Yeah, and then when the anger begins to lay hold of them, that's when you see even a lot worse things taking place. Now, although we do learn and we have outward instruction from the outward activities in our lives, and they may be profitable to us, but we must also ask the Lord to enlighten us by his own word. The design here, of course, chiefly refers to this point, that we may know that Jacob returned to his own country under the special guidance from God. If God was not guiding him, Jacob didn't want to go. And we see Moses doing the same thing later on. He said, if thy presence not be with us, take us not up hence. And as we've learned before, the land of Canaan is called the land of Abraham and Isaac, not because they had sprung from it, but because it had been divinely promised to them in their inheritance. And therefore, by this voice, this holy oracle that comes to... Remember, Jacob doesn't have a copy of the Bible. He doesn't have the Holy Spirit telling him what the words of this book are like we do, right? And teaching us from it. He's hearing a voice from heaven telling him. And by this voice, this holy man was admonished. And although Isaac had been a stranger, yet in the sight of God, He was the heir and lord of a land in which he possessed nothing in it but a grave. Right? In verse 4 it says, and Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. Now notice it says, it doesn't say that he called Rachel and Leah from the field unto his flock. It says he called Rachel and Leah to the field where he is. That's where Jacob's been. He's on the job. He says, honey, come on out here to me. I'm here at work. I can't leave. The sheep are right here. The cattle are right here. I'm not going anywhere. Because there might be wolves that might be coming after him. So he sends for his wives to explain his intentions and encourage them to accompany him on his trip. He says, look, we got to pack up and go. I need y'all to go with me. So he's saying there, as a good husband, he's going to take them away with him. And therefore, it was necessary to inform them of his design. Now, what does that say about the accusation that Laban makes against him? You're taking my daughters away from me by sword. Right? You're forcing them to go. Is that what he's doing? No, he's not doing that. He's explaining to them. He was mindful of the many dangers of his plan. Now, he's not leaving knowing that this is a safe place where we're going. We're going on vacation. Right? No, we're going to this resort. No, he's leaving Laban in this area, and they're stepping into a more dangerous area on the way. It was difficult to convey to women, especially those who had never left their father's house, to a remote region by an unknown journey. Now, this speaks well of Leah and Rachel, right? And moreover, there was reason to fear, because in seeking protection for themselves, they might betray their husbands to their enemies. You know, as much as we love women and we think about them and we think that they are really good, but they are human beings. Calvin points this out to us here. And they are subject to the same problems we have and the same temptations we have. And if their lives were laid on the line, who knows what direction they're going to go? They might disregard conjugal fidelity altogether. And might, under certain circumstances, which are similar to war, they would do what's necessary to provide for their own safety. And they might even betray the children. Y'all go ahead and take him, but you know, y'all take care of me, you can have him. But basically, now Jacob therefore acted with great constancy in choosing rather to expose himself to danger than to fail in the duty of a good husband and master of a family. If his wives had refused to accompany him, the call of God would still have compelled him to depart. In other words, he's basically telling them, look, I got to go. Y'all can come with me. I love you. I want you to come with me. And I need you to come with me. But if you don't want to come, that's your choice. But I've got to go. God granted him what was far more desirable. What was that that he granted him? That his whole family, with one consent, is prepared to follow him. His wives, whose previous mutual strife, remember last week we talked about Rachel and Leah fighting against each other? Now they're in agreement with each other. It's like the strife is gone, and they freely consent to go with Jacob into exile. In good faith, when we discharge our duty and shun nothing which he commands, the Lord enables us to succeed, even in the most doubtful affair. Isn't that the case? And even when we do not, yet the Lord still blesses us because of his grace. But how much more blessings would we receive if we would do exactly everything that he says? From the fact that Jacob calls his wives to him into the field, we infer that he led an uneasy life. Jacob didn't have it easy, right? He wasn't at a resort. Well, he's out there with the animals. Can you imagine how smelly that is with all those animals? Yeah. And now he's an old man, worn down with many toils, and therefore he had the greater need for their assistance. How long did he work?
20 years.
20 years. You know, some people what work 30, 35 years and they retire. Jacob's almost there, you know, but he can't retire. He's got to keep going. He is now advanced in age and worn down with many toils, and therefore he had the greater need for their assistance. His wives become more and more valuable to him, and he sees it as he gets older and older. Right? You men cherish your wives and hold on to them. He lived apart from them to watch over his flocks. That's why he had to call them to him. And he begins to tell them, he says, I see your daddy's father, your countenance, how your father's looking at me. He speaks of his own integrity and complains about the treachery of his father-in-law. He next testifies that God is the author of his prosperity in order that Rachel and Leah may the more willingly accompany him. He said, look, it's not because I'm this great farmer that all these animals are being born into my flocks. It's what? It's God who has blessed me. He had become rich in just a short space of time, but he purges himself from all suspicion and appeals to them as witnesses of his diligence. He said, you see how I've gotten up every morning and gone to work? And how hard I've been working to take care of these sheep and cattle? You see it yourselves. I didn't steal from your daddy. Now, Moses didn't go into minute detail of everything, but yet there's no doubt that the honesty of Jacob had been made clear to them by many proofs. And moreover, the injuries and the frauds and grief of their father, they knew it. They saw it. They couldn't believe what their father was doing to Jacob and how he changed everything all the time. And when he complains that his wages have been changed 10 times, it's probable that the number was at least 10. But it could have been even more than that. The point is this, that within 6 years, Laban had frequently broken his agreement to Jacob. And since there would be twice as many seasons of breeding lambs, namely during the spring and the autumn, as we've said. But this narration of the dream, although it follows in a subsequent part of the history, shows that holy Jacob had undertaken nothing but how? By what God had told him to do. Calvin believed that the angel should assume the person of God, either because God the Father appeared to the holy patriarchs in his own word as in a lively mirror, and that under the form of an angel, or because angels speaking by the command of God rightly utter their words as from God's mouth. In other words, they're not going to change what God has told them to say to their servant. The prophets are accustomed to this form of speaking, not that they may exalt themselves into the place of God, but only that the majesty of God, whose ministers they are, may shine forth in his message. Now, it's proper that we should more carefully consider the force of this form of expression. He does not call himself the God of Bethel because that's where he's confined. You know, y'all come on up here to Bethel because that's where my house is. No, we know that God is where. He's not confined to any given place. He's not limited by that, but for the purpose of renewing to his servant Jacob the remembrance of his own promise. In other words, that's where we met, Jacob. That's where I met you. Remember? That's where you need to go back to. That's where I want you to go. That's a spot, not for him, but for Jacob. And so holy Jacob had not yet attained to that degree of perfection. Therefore, the more simple rudiments are still necessary for him. You say, why does God have to resort to that? Well, remember, the Bible's not complete for these people in the Old Testament. So God has to resort to that. You know, just like we teach our children by little toys and pictures and things like that, right? And those are adequate for them as their children because they don't know how to read yet, right? And it's the same case here. These are like infants in the church of God. And so God's dealing with them as infants. And these rudiments that we see, these rude things of the world, we question sometimes, why does God have to resort to these in that situation? But as the light of true doctrine for that time prevailed, yet even that was wrapped in many shadows. We see that. But God, and after Jesus has come, what do we find about the Bible? All those shadows are taken away in Christ. And we don't need them anymore, although they still remain in His Word to teach us how He dealt with those people back then. Right? But even with that, nearly the whole world had apostatized into false gods. And that region, nay, even the house of his father-in-law, was filled with all these holy superstitions that come with all these rudiments and trinkets, statues and pictures and things. There's a lot of superstition associated with all of those things. And that's what even in Laban's house, with all these idols that he had. And Jacob is surrounded by all of this. His life is weary with having to deal with all of that. Nothing was more difficult for him than to hold his faith to the one true God firmly and invincibly. In the first place, pure religion is commended to him in order that among the various errors of the world, he may adhere to the obedience and worship of that God that he had known at one time. Right? He knew him once, and that's all that was necessary for Jacob. When once God deals with you, right? And you know it, that he's dealt with you, and he's given you grace to believe, that does not leave you for the rest of your life. It stays with you. And it's just like those stones that are raised up in the desert out there. That's the place that we can always come back to. It's a spiritual place. We don't see it as not a physical place, but it's a spiritual point. That point in your life, God made himself known to you. Secondly, the promise which he had received before is reconfirmed to him in order that he may always keep his mind fixed on that special covenant which God had made with Abraham and his posterity. And the blessing that Jacob had that a lot of us don't is, my daddy believed in the Lord. If we could only say, my father believed in the Lord. My mother believed in the Lord. My grandfather believed in the Lord. And it was all the way down. And Jacob's doing the same thing. God had made a covenant with my grandfather, Abraham, and my father, Isaac. And he's looking back. And he promised them this land. And he's directed to the land, which is his own inheritance. Otherwise, the temporal blessing of God, which he was soon to enjoy, should only be wrapped up in his heart in Mesopotamia. Somewhere else. Whatever benefits God afterwards bestows ought to be referred to that first design. And that's what God is bringing Jacob back to. Now, we may also assume from this passage that Jacob had before preached to his household concerning the true God and the true religion as becomes a faithful father of his family. There's no doubt in my mind that when Jacob saw Laban's idols, that he went home and told his family, look, you see your father-in-law with those trinkets and idols over there? That's not how God wants to be worshipped. He was a faithful father to his family. And unless his wives had previously been instructed respecting that wonderful vision, he would have seemed absurd in uttering this account at this point, right? Jacob's bringing back their mind. You remember how God, and I told you about that, how God met with me, right? If that would have been the first time that he's telling them, Leah and Rachel said, what is this fool? He's telling us about this dream that he had? No. Jacob distinguishes the God whom he worshipped from the God of Laban. The contrast is there clear. Thus we find that the Lord had never been forgetful of him. This is an example of showing Jacob, as much as we see some faults in him, had never forgotten that he had believed in God. On this day, the same as he was towards them, if any way the wicked tyrannically oppress him by unjust violence, let them bear it patiently until at length, in due time, God will avenge them. Yes, sir?
Yep, we see where Rachel takes those household gods.
Yeah.
So she hadn't really fully got picture.
No, and it says something about human nature in that. You know, as much as this girl, woman, okay, I should say, you know, she knew Jacob and she loved Jacob, and she was faithful to Jacob because she's leaving. But she says, I can't leave without taking those gods. Because if my daddy had those things, there must be something to it if daddy had them, right? And that's the way she's looking at it.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. But Jacob didn't know it. Because she knew what Jacob's response would be if he found out, right?
He's going to burn
them things, yeah. Let me see in verse 14, that Rachel and Leah answer him. And that's when they say, is there any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? What's left, Jacob? You know, he's given it all away to his sons. We don't have anything left, right? That's what he's saying. Where else can we go? And so here we perceive that which Paul teaches us is fulfilled, that all things work together for good to them that love God, right? To the called according to his purpose. And since the wives of Jacob had been unjustly treated by their father, they act so far in opposition to the natural tenderness of their sex that at the desire of their husband, they become willing to follow him into a distant and unknown region. In other words, here's my father and here's my husband. What is the case with most girls, right? I'm not leaving daddy. I got to build my house right at the shadow of his house, right? When the sun comes up in the morning, I want that shade to be on my house. That's how close I want to be to daddy's house. Most girls are like that, right? Why? Because that's the security that they're looking for. But these women, what? What do they say?
Peace, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here. Yeah. Since the wives of Jacob had been unjustly treated by their father, they act so far in opposition to the natural tenderness of their sex that at the desire of their husband, they become willing to follow him into a distant and unknown region. Not only are they going to follow him, they're going somewhere where it ain't laid out in the brochure, you know, what it's going to be like when we get to the resort. Right? There's no lounge chairs around the pool. You know, there's no cabana boy bringing out some nice drinks by the pool, right? And there's no umbrellas to keep us in the shade. No. They don't know where they're going, but yet they're going to go with Jacob. And so therefore Jacob is compelled to endure many and very bitter moments of grief, but now he's cheered by the most satisfying compensation. Can you imagine Jacob's heart when they tell him what they say? His wives are not separated from him by being overly attached to their father's house, but instead being overcome by the irksome sufferings in Laban's household, they're determined to join Jacob in his flight. It's almost as though they're saying, we're going to show daddy. He's going to do this to us. We're going with Jacob. There's nothing, they say, which should cause us to remain with our father. Daughters adhere to their fathers because they're esteemed members of his family. But what a cruel rejection is this. Not only that he has passed us off without dowry, but that he has set us aside to sail and has devoured us for the price he sold us. In other words, they said, my daddy just sold us to Jacob. And by the word money, in Genesis 31:15, it's understood as the price of sale. For they complained at least that they had not received, instead of a dowry, the profit which had been unjustly extorted from their husband. But this gain also had been unjustly suppressed by their covetous father. In other words, Laban didn't give Jacob anything for us. He sold us for money as a prostitute. So notice that, but then again, notice the language that they're using. It's really not that they're so devoted to Jacob and freely depart from their father, knowing that the hand of God was stretched out to them. There's also no doubt that they were persuaded that Jacob was a faithful prophet of God. And they freely embraced the heavenly oracle from his mouth. They did not show so much to yield to his wishes as to the command of God. I believe that's what they saw. That's what convinced him. You know, it's not so much because of Jacob and being her husband. It's because he's a prophet. Right? And God speaks to us through him. In verse 16 it says, "For all the riches with God are taken from my father." Rachel and Leah confirm the speech of Jacob. Yet their righteous act is taken too far, as it often is the case. They don't argue that the riches they possessed were theirs because they had been justly acquired by the labor of their husband. But then they believe that it was because they themselves should not have been defrauded of their dowry and now deprived of their lawful inheritance. And in so doing, what are they doing? They're basically devaluing Jacob's works. By boasting that the fruit of their labors, or these labors, proceeded from themselves. That's the sad thing about this. You know, people get blinded by things when they're going into these rational thoughts, trying to ration things out of their minds, and always don't always think clearly. You know. So in verse 17, but Jacob doesn't get into all of that. You know. He says, "Yeah, I know, but I'm just thankful that they're coming with me. God, thank you so much. My wives are coming. Even though they may not give me all the credit that I need because of all the work I've done, you know, at least they're coming." So Jacob's happy, you know. And so as soon as he could obtain the consent of his wives to go with him, he has no other obstacles. And therein we see the manly strength and constancy of his mind. He had believed that his exile from home would only be for a short time. What little did he know?
20 years.
Yeah. But deprived of the sight of his parents and of his native soil for 20 years, he suffered many things so severe and bitter that the endurance of them might have rendered him callous, mean. But we don't see that in Jacob, do we? All of those things actually did what? Soften him. At least made him, might have so oppressed him as to consume the remnant of his life. But yet he still goes on, doesn't he? He is now verging towards old age, and the coldness of old age produces tardiness. I see it in my own life. You know, I don't move like I used to. You know, and when I got to get up to work and get there for, you know, 7:30, you know, I drag in sometimes, barely making it, because it's hard to get up in the morning. Yeah. But thank God, I haven't been late. In verse 19, it says, "And Rachel had stolen." That's where we're going to get into this right now. And although these Hebrews sometimes call those images teraphim, right? Teraphim and cherubims. And we see the ones stretched out over the mercy seat on the Ark of the Covenant. You know, we know that these were not set forth as objects of worship, because the Hebrews knew that God was an invisible God. You can't make an image of that which is invisible. And the moment you do, what do?
You debase God.
Right, you do. And basically, you're telling and misrepresenting him. Because there is no idol in the world that can capture the infinite. Right? And to try to do so is only to do what? To cast misinformation into it. We can only know God through his word in the mind, right here. These things are not set forth as objects of worship. Yet, since this term is commonly used in an ill sense, Calvin didn't doubt that they were referring to the household gods of Laban, even though in the Hebrew they call teraphim. Even Laban himself, shortly afterwards, especially called them what? Gods. You've taken my gods from me. Holy Jacob had not been silent during those 20 years, but he had endeavored by counsel and admonition to correct those gross vices. But obviously what? It didn't have any effect on Laban. All these years I've been trying to teach this dumb old man, right? And he hadn't caught on a bit. Rachel had often heard her husband speaking of the true and genuine worship of God, yet she's so addicted to the corruptions which she had absorbed from her childhood. This is the thing that's very difficult, you know, to rip those things out of the minds of children when they grab onto them. That she's so infected with that, she's got to have those gods with her, those idols with her, as they go into the next land. That she's willing to risk infesting the whole country with those things. Because that's what happens, right? Once that door cracks open, it's like a flood that comes through. She's willing to infect the whole land. It's even possible that Jacob's excessive indulgence, that's the other thing. She probably said, well, I'm going to go ahead and take these, but I know Jacob loves me. He's not going to say anything about this if he finds out about it.
Or he'll forgive me.
Or he'll forgive me, right? So I'm going to go ahead and grab onto him. You know, it's a whole lot easier to get forgiveness than it is permission, right? You've heard that one before.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's because of his excessive indulgence on his beloved wife that might have led her to the assumption that Jacob was going to accept it. And these superstitions that come with it. Consequently, it's manifest that the house of Jacob was polluted with idols, even to the time of the violation of Dinah. We're going to find out about that. She thought an invisible God could not be worshipped except through idols. And this is the source of the disease, isn't it? That since men are carnal, they imagine men to be carnal too, don't they? Paul tells us that in Romans 1. That which may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has shown it unto them, even the invisible things of him from the creation of the world, so that they are clearly seen. But when they knew God, what did they do? They didn't choose to acknowledge him as God, right? No. And that's what they're doing here. They're carnal. Because we're carnal, God must be carnal like us. So he needs these idols for us to worship him. Because he knows us. We can't really imagine an invisible God or really cling to him through his word. So we got to have these idols to help us see him. I was talking to a guy at work who's from India, and they have gods, you know. And I asked him one time, do you really believe that this is your God? He said, no, we know that it's not our God. This is a picture of our God. All these things that we have in our homes, these shrines that we set up in our homes, he said, that's to help us see Krishna and Ishna, or whatever his name are, whatever their names are in India, the Hindu gods that are there. That's what they believe.
Maybe their God has a picture of them on his wall somewhere.
That's what they might think. Yeah.
Well, that's why some people put pictures of this Christ that they have. They say it helps remind them.
That's it.
Or a cross. It helps remind me that I need to go to the cross.
And somehow in their mind they convince themselves, yeah, you know, I'm really a religious person because I have these things on in my house. But what if God told you that's not how he wants to be remembered? What does he say? I shall have no other gods before me. And he knew what he was telling them when he told them that. You're not going to have any images of me. Because if you try to, what are you going to do? You're basically debasing me as God. And you talk about anger him? That's a quick way to do it. And so we see that Jacob steals away unaware. Jacob departed privately or by stealth, unknown to his father-in-law. It points out the measure of dire straits that Jacob was reduced to. So that he had no hope of deliverance except to leave. I'm not going to get out of here. I've already seen, I've tried to separate myself from Laban by 3 days, and it ain't enough. Right? So I got to get out of here. And I got to get out of here at night. Right?
Undercover.
Yeah.
I'm already taking 3 days off and I'm still
Exactly.
Still
exactly.
Undercover.
So Laban, he's got to get out of there. And so Laban was determined to hold him all of his life as a captive, as if he'd been a slave bound to the soil or sentenced to the mines. Now next week, we're going to learn that the Lord bridles Laban's ferocity. As we see, he comes to him in a dream. But then he still resorts to pretense and hypocrisy, right? And flatters him. Why didn't you just let me have this party for you, Jacob? You didn't have to go to all of this. We could have had a party, you know? We could have had a festival. I could have been able to hug and kiss my daughters and my grandchildren. But now you've done this. He complains that injury's been done to him. Look what you've done to me, Jacob, by doing this. For the eternity, they finally make him feel guilty, right? Don't the wicked do that? Try to make you feel guilty because you've done this to me, right? All of this that I've done for you, and you're doing this to me, right? He says, when he would rather have set forth with customary tokens of joy and remembrances of paternal affections. Thus, hypocrites, when the power of inflicting injury is taken away from them, they resort to what? Heaping false complaints upon the good and simple, as if the blame rested with them. If any time the wicked and perfidious men, when they have unjustly harassed us, put forward some pretext of equity on their own part, we must bear with the iniquity. Why? Because you're not going to change their minds of it. They're set on doing it, so there's no point in arguing with them about it. Not because a just defense is entirely admitted, but because we find it inevitable that perverse men, ever ready to speak evil, will shamelessly cast upon us the blame of crimes of which we are innocent. Jacob tells Laban, look, man, this is why I got out. Because all this time that I worked for you, you know, all you did was heap more work on me. And made things, and you changed our agreement so many times, I've just had it. I can't go on. Meanwhile, we must prudently guard against giving them occasion against us, which they seek. And that's the thing. That's the hard thing to do. Don't give them a reason to justify the accusations that they're making. Right? And when they get angry with us, that's an easy thing to fall into, isn't it? An easy trap to fall into. Look at you. You've resorted to cursing. Look at you. You've resorted to stealing from me. And people do that. They get angry with them, even though they've given them all their lives. You know, what are they going to do on the way out? I'm going to steal all these jewels. All the way in. I'm going to fix them. They haven't given me what I think. I had a guy at Exxon. Him and his wife were going through a divorce. You know,
yep.
And she didn't get what she wanted out of the divorce, so she called up Exxon. Yeah. She said, y'all come get your tools. Yeah. They went to the house, his house, and they weren't there. He said, come on in, hey there. But then he called her back and said, you didn't have any tools in the house. Y'all didn't look in the right place. Y'all need to go out to the deer camp. That's where they were.
Yeah.
And they got a warrant from the DA, went out there. And they found some tools. How much is that? $30,000?
Truckloads.
$30,000 worth they estimated?
Yeah.
Tools, yeah.
He had an affinity for big C clamps. Oh, 100 of them.
Wow, so.
Everything was new. Nothing's used.
Yeah. What's the man going to do with all them tools? Unless he's going to run a crew with them, right?
Yeah.
But that's like anything. I've heard of a bunch of them. Stores the same way. Matter of fact, I knew a guy down the street.